Thank you very much for joining us today on the StashMyComics.com podcast. We are powered by Geek Energy, ladies and gentlemen. Today I have with me Jason Martin, our editor at StashMyComics.com. Jason, how you doing?
Not bad. How are you?
I am doing fantastic. Thank you. Next we have Tom Hefner. He writes Geek Cinema on StashMyComics. Tom, how you doing today?
I am well. Hello.
And we have a special guest with us. She is on Stash My Comics. Her handle there is Hand Covers Rouge. Is that right, Kelly?
Yeah.
Fantastic. We have Kelly Bohork with us. Say hi.
Hi.
All right. Okay, let's go ahead and jump right into it, guys. Let's go ahead and go right with the news.
There's going to be a new Ultimate Spider-Man cartoon.
Well, it's definitely the right move for them.
Record for highest selling comic book of all time. Top secret classified documents.
Okay, so what we have here is two very important pieces of news that I think is huge in the comic industry right now. So we have Northstar from Marvel, member of Alpha Flight, openly gay superhero. He's getting married. So what do we think about that? Jason, what do you think about that?
Well, it's not really surprising, I guess. I mean, he's been gay in the comics for years now.
Since the 90s, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's been a long time.
95, but I don't know if that number is right at all. I'm just sort of guessing. But yeah, the 90s, definitely.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's not like it's anything new for people, at least for the mutant titles, for the X titles, X-Force, X-Factor, Uncanny, all that stuff. I mean, Northstar is a regular recurring character in there. So him being gay, I mean, at least to me, it doesn't affect how I read the story.
No. Yeah, I was more surprised to find out he was alive again.
Yeah. That was kind of surprising. I thought he got gutted by Wolverine and
last time I saw, he was on the wrong end of Wolverine's claws.
Well, see, the last thing I read that had Northstar in it was X-Men: The End, and in there, I think he got burned alive.
So things not going well for Northstar there.
No, but okay. So Marvel pulls the big to-do. You know, they throw the marriage in into the X titles. I believe he. What is it, Astonishing X-Men is the one he's getting married in?
51, yep.
Number 51. Okay, Kelly, give us your thoughts on that. What do you think?
Just about the marriage in general?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm not a big X-Men reader, but I think it's a really good thing for especially, like, children that read comics, just so they can see, like, gay characters who are strong characters and be like, it's not a bad thing to be gay. It's okay to be a superhero and like boys, or if you're a boy and like girls if you're a girl.
Right. You're not this big, monstrous creature that some of the left or right-wing extremists like to put it out to be. But that's neither here or there. But
well, in response to that, someone on my Twitter that I follow, They said that if you are upset by the gay marriage in the X-Men comics, you don't really understand the X-Men.
Yeah.
And that's because, you know, that's what the X-Men are. They're hated, feared, and if you're doing the same thing, if you're an X-Men fan, then you don't really get it.
If you look at it, Northstar kind of really fits that to a T, though, because what did Xavier start? He started Xavier School for Gifted Youngsters for mutant children that were hated and feared by their peers. I mean, in the 60s when that was created, what was the big thing going on? It was civil rights, you know, not only for women, but for African Americans and other minorities, too. So, you know, that played into it then, and especially now today, the big thing that we have going on as far as civil rights is the gay rights movement. And who better to be a flagship character for that, at least in Marvel, than Northstar, who is not only Canadian, but also a mutant, and on top of that, openly homosexual.
You know, it's, I gotta say, I've got a couple, look, X-Men has always been it's always been a metaphor for anyone who's ever felt like an outcast. That's pretty much the entire thrust of the core of the title. That's what the title is.
Yeah.
I look at it a couple of ways. In one way, look, the gay marriage itself, especially when it gets the press that it gets, sometimes seems like it's an attention grabber. Because, I mean, let's be fair, comic revenues are down across the board, even though clearly comic characters and superheroes are remarkably profitable looking at sort of the money that superhero movies make.
I think that might be because of terrible stories.
Yeah, I don't know. I think there's still that stigma that it's kid stuff. No one wants to go to an LCS if they aren't regular customers in an LCS. It, you know, we'll see if the digital numbers push this forward. On the other hand, I'm sure the creator behind the book just wants to tell a compelling story about compelling characters.
Right.
You know, so there's that. The other thing that kind of disappoints me about this is, and this bleeds a little bit into, you know, the next thing we're going to talk about, of course, is going to be Alan Scott, but I'll hold off on that. The idea that Northstar, okay, he's a character in the X-Men universe, but, you know, like we just said, we didn't even know he was alive.
Would it have been a bigger impact if they did somebody like Banshee or maybe even Cable? For example, you know, that would come out as openly gay. Would that make a bigger impact than what Northstar has?
Yes, because it's a more popular character, but then you have to be careful that you're not, because if you force that onto a character who's really established, then you're clearly just doing it for the, you know, the eyeballs, for ratings, as it were, you know?
Jason, what were you going to say?
I was going to agree that, you throw it onto a character like Cable, who's been established, he's been around, and then it just seems like an attention grabber, or, you know, just a big money grab. With Northstar, he's at least established. It's been that's been his character for a long time.
For years, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so final thoughts on that. Kelly, what are your final thoughts there?
Just about what you said about putting it on a main character. I mean, like, even if they did put it on, like, a very big-name character, it'd have to be someone that, like, people could easily see them being gay. Because, like, there are people that are, like, they will refuse to believe, like, that, like, Iron Man is and, like, Captain America are gay.
No,
like,
I see Iron Man coming out one day in the future. I could honestly see that.
Iron Man?
Yeah, why not? I mean, his thing with Pepper Potts could be a rouge.
Yeah, what about his things with the billions of other women in the Marvel Universe?
It all leads up to whatever happens when he comes out.
He's overcompensating.
There you go. There you,
exactly. Right.
That's what the suit of armor is for. Okay, so let's move forward from here to the next big topic, which is Alan Scott. I mean, okay, first off, is Alan Scott even a big enough character to bring out? Because who do you think of when you think of Hal Jordan, or when you think of Green Lantern? MTV thinks of Hal Jordan, and that's the picture they put up.
Actually, can I correct you on that? I think most people think of Jon Stewart.
John Stewart, ooh.
Because
he was on the cartoon.
Because the number one question I got when the Green Lantern movie was coming out from friends of mine who are not comic book people is, why come Green Lantern isn't black in the movie?
Wow, that's a good point, good point. But with Earth 2, I mean, the first issue came out last month, and we saw the death of the Big Three in that. Now we have another big note on Earth 2 number 2, which is Alan Scott admitting or openly coming out that he's gay. So, Jason, you are the expert Green Lantern person on this panel right now. So what are your thoughts on that?
Well, in reference to if he's a big enough character or not, yes and no. He's been the Green Lantern for 60 years, aside from that little time in the 90s when he was Sentinel. So he's been around, but then again, to me it feels kind of like a cop out, because I don't know if Earth 2's continuity is really going to be considered canon in the new 52, and if it's not, then it just seems like a cop out. Like, yeah, we made a gay character, but he's on Earth 2, you know?
Right. Kelly, what do you think?
I mean, I'd heard of Alan Scott, but I honestly thought it was going to be, like, someone bigger than him, because not a lot, like you said, not a lot of people, like, know about him. They know more about Jon Stewart.
Right.
So.
The big speculation that I saw on Twitter was that it was honestly going to be Batman or Robin. I think a lot of people were gunning for that.
I was gunning for Robin.
And you know what? That would have been a lot more interesting, I got to be honest.
See, that's funny you say that, Kelly, because my dad called me and thought that he was going to be all nice and smart and say that he asked me, he said, did you hear the news in comic books? I said, no, Dad, what is it? He says, they're going to bring out a gay character. You know who it is? I said, Dad, it's not going to be Robin.
Well, it's funny you had that situation. I was talking to a friend of mine. I said, hey, we know DC's making a gay character, or they're, one of their established characters is coming out gay. He's like, is it Robin? I'm like, no, it's not Robin.
So the oversight is Robin's too obvious?
I think people are thinking of, like, the campy, like, 1960s kind of thing, where they think of it as, like, him being, like, the gay little sidekick and not really about the comic books.
I think it may have been the scaly underwear and the wingtip shoes that
just a little bit.
Yeah. But, okay, so let's...
Wait one second. I'm not as up-to-date on my New 52 as I should be. I primarily read Marvel. Who is Robin in New 52?
I think it's still, it is, is it?
Damian.
Damian.
It should be Damian. Isn't their canon still established, like they didn't change it?
Yeah, they didn't change Batman.
Track. Because I think if you had taken Damian Wayne and rewrote him as a gay character, that would have been fascinating. And mm-hmm. so many story opportunities that you're missing by copying out and giving it to the fifth most popular Green Lantern.
Right?
I mean, Damian's kind of young, so he could, discover his sexuality.
Absolutely. In Scott's defense, though, I mean, he is now the current leader of what will be the Justice Society on Earth 2.
Yeah, Earth 2. It's not even the real Earth.
Right. That's the thing.
But look at it this way.
Earth 2.
DC has stated that Hal Jordan and Alan Scott will meet up eventually. So is it a cop-out, Jason? Could it be? I mean, with those two iconic characters, the original Green Lantern by name only and the Green Lantern from the Green Lantern Corps coming together to meet for the first time in the New 52?
Well, I guess it all depends on how Earth 2's continuity is viewed. If it's considered part of the canon, then yeah, it's a bigger deal than it not really existing. It being Earth 2, it's a parallel Earth. It doesn't really exist because the New 52 is our Earth.
Right, okay. So let's look at it this way. With Alan Scott, he really is kind of the prime target to use, because you can't use Batman, because with Batman and Catwoman, that would wipe out years of history as far as the characters are concerned. And Batman and Talia al Ghul, and other characters, you know, and with Superman, you can't use him because of his relationship with Lois Lane. That is iconic in comic books. When you think of Superman, you think of Lois Lane. You know,
well, I don't even want to say it's you can't use those two because of their relationships with women in the comics. From a business standpoint, DC wouldn't do that because they'd risk alienating the huge number of Superman and Batman fans that wouldn't want to, you know, well, some Superman and Batman fans that wouldn't want their favorite character to be gay.
Right, right. Well, let's take a look at what they said here. Now, I've got the New York Times, or the New York Daily News article up about this, and they go right into it about the creation or the thought process behind this, and this is what they say. Let's see here. This is a quote from James Robinson, the writer of Earth 2. He says, I was sort of putting the team together, and I realized one of the only downsides to relaunching the Justice Society as young, vibrant heroes, again, was that Alan Scott's son, who was an openly gay character, Obsidian, mm-hmm. was no longer going to exist in the reboot. Now, yeah, that comes from James Robinson, and he wrote the 98 storyline about Obsidian that featured the first gay superhero kiss in comic books. So, let's talk about that for a second. So I guess they're kind of leading the two characters together is what it looks like to me. They're taking Obsidian and just, you know, what it was about him and putting it into Alan Scott and retconning him into a younger character and putting him in charge of the Justice Society. Now,
coming from a writer's point of view, as a playwright, from James Robinson, from the creator's point of view, I'm sure he is looking forward to the opportunity to do something interesting and dynamic, and I applaud him for trying to sort of keep that sensibility in the Earth 2 Alan Scott Green Lantern genre universe of stories. So that's a great thing and good for the creator. But I mean, I think the wants of the comic company and the execution of the creator are always going to be two different things. I think they have two different perspectives.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so looking at this though, you have Earth 2, which is the alternate universe, the parallel world. So with Alan Scott coming out as gay, I mean, I guess it all boils down to what the gay community thinks about that. Are they willing to just accept any character that's promoted as openly homosexual, or are they looking for something specific?
I mean, in general, the gay community is very happy to have, like, any openly gay characters in film and TV and literature and comic books. But, I mean, like, It has to be done well. It can't just be a silly add-on character. Like, they want them to be portrayed in a good light.
Right, absolutely. Like, if you look at the characters, in, like Will and Grace, for example. I mean, when you see gay characters in there, they're... I don't know how to put it, but it's just the gay men are very feminine and, you know, act a lot differently. But with this... The way that they're talking about with Alan Scott, I mean, it's just going to be like, okay, I'm gay. That's all there is to it. I'm going to go on and I'm going to save the world.
We don't know. We haven't read the character yet.
Well, yeah, that's true. But with all the interviews and stuff that they've been doing, that's kind of the idea that I'm getting from what they're saying.
I mean, look, I don't think they're going to write him like Jack on Will and Grace, who's overly flamboyant, you know, over the top gay.
But if you look at it, that's kind of the template that a lot of companies use. I mean, if you could pick out a gay character that is overly muscular and very masculine, point him out to me. But when you think about it, that's what people think of at first.
Yeah, you're talking about the portrayal of gay men in media, in popular culture, in film, and television. That's the sort of gay sort of shtick stereotype that is reserved for the wacky sidekick, best friend, girlfriend character.
Right.
I think we have reached a point where there's a lot more honest portrayals of homosexual men and women in media. But I mean, when you go to that again, when you go to the Jack, you are reaching to do a specific thing with that character. It's usually not done in a main role, or a leading role. It's done as a supporting character, and usually for comedy's sake.
Right, a supporting character that's slapstick based or just there for comic relief.
Yeah, yeah, and I think we've really kind of moved away from that since we've seen a wider range of gay characters.
Right.
And yeah, I really do believe that. Maybe not so much in comics per se, but you know what? It's hard to portray that sort of shticky gay persona in three colors, pen and ink. You know, it doesn't read as the same way.
Well, with that, I personally can say that I enjoyed the first issue of Earth 1. I'm looking very forward to reading the second issue of Earth 2. And with Alan Scott being gay, that means no difference to me whatsoever, so long as the stories are good. If this is used specifically for a publicity stunt, it's a waste of time. But if it's not, I mean, if this, they're going to be really genuine about it and really push for good characterization and great stories, then by all means, they will get my $3.99 every month.
I agree. I love the first issue. It was great. It threw you in the deep end story wise, but
yeah,
it's still a great issue.
Okay, so final thoughts on that, Tom? Go ahead.
Okay, yeah, I'm still, look, bottom line, the story's good, that's ultimately all that matters. I still kind of feel like, you know, it reminds me of Secret Invasion.
Okay.
Like, oh, some big characters are going to be Skrulls that turn out to be, you know, Dum Dum Dugan and forgetful Elektra. It's like, who cares, you know?
Letdowns.
I really feel that way with this. I'm sorry. I really, you know, when they said a major character is going to be gay or going to come out as gay or going to reboot him as gay, I really didn't think it was going to be the fifth or sixth most popular Green Lantern if you count Kilowog, who's very popular. And I've got to say, I think the North Star marriage is a bigger deal. It's a more controversial deal. It's a bigger issue because gay marriage is, I think right now, maybe I'm wrong, this is my perspective from sort of viewing the world, gay marriage is a bigger issue or bigger deal than just being gay in general.
Fair enough. Kelly, final thoughts?
I kind of agree. It's kind of a bit of a cop-out. But, I mean, any gay character is still good. It's good to get it out there in comics that there are gay characters and they're strong characters.
Right on. Okay, so what we're going to do now is we are going to dive right into these reviews. let's see here. What we have lined up is we have Amazing Spider-Man number 351, first appearance of Mark Bagley, well, actually second of Bagley coming in as pencils. And Tom picked Green Lantern Rebirth number 3. We'll jump right into that after the music.
The dialogue is so great.
You know, I don't know where in the timeline this is all taking place.
Fans of Deathstroke are going to love this.
What ends up happening is that other people start finding out about this.
It's a bunch of humans in these invisible suits.
These guys look pretty hardcore.
Okay. So, first off, let's go ahead and jump into Amazing Spider-Man number 351. If anybody's interested as to what the cover looks like, you can go and do a quick search on Stash My Comics. Just type in Amazing Spider-Man issue number 351. Show you an ultra cool cover of the Tri-Sentinel, Nova, and Spider-Man. All right, so did you guys read it?
Yes. I read it many, many years ago. I own this and read it many times.
I love this issue. I've got my own personal story about this, but I want to get your guys' input on it first. So, Tom, let's go ahead and go with you. What did you think?
Okay, so, look, this is Spider-Man and Nova fighting the Tri-Sentinel, right?
Yes.
And the Vibranium. And, look, I love it specifically because it's where Mark Bagley comes on. I know a lot of people are very critical of Bagley's artwork, but I consider, maybe it's because of when I kind of started reading comics, I think Bagley is the quintessential Spider-Man artist.
He is, and this right here is what started that. A lot of people seem to forget that.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people like to go McFarlane when they talk about Spider-Man. Or they go, of course, you go back to Ditko, but my favorite Spider artist has definitely been Bagley. I think Ultimate Spider-Man lost something when Bagley left the book.
Yeah.
And you know, for like 10 years now, when you see marketed Spider-Man images, it's usually a Mark Bagley Ultimate Spider-Man.
It is. And in the 90s, once Bagley got his stride on Amazing Spider-Man, any piece of marketed media, plates, shirts, posters, credit cards even, MasterCard even put out a credit card, it was all Bagley art. Bagley was, his pencil strokes were what made Spider-Man.
Yeah. And this is another example. You know, look, clearly Spider-Man has a lot of guest stars or had a lot of guest stars because it's the flagship book. So, you know, when you want to give a character pub, you either put him in the Spider-Man book or Wolverine book, or you put Spider-Man or Wolverine in their books. Yeah. So one of the many friends of Spider-Man over the years was Nova, and here's another great example of Nova as a great character, a character who's gone in and out over the years for some higher quality, some lower quality.
Right.
But this is just, you know, one of the many, you know, no pun intended, the many amazing friends of Spider-Man.
Jason, chime in on this. What did you think of the issue?
Well, I don't know anyone. Oh, I don't know how anyone could take anything away from Mark Bagley's art. Yeah, he's the quintessential Spider-Man artist to me. I did the review of Ultimate Spider-Man where him and Bendis started off the that title, and I gave the art a 10. You can't get any better than Mark Bagley doing Spider-Man.
No.
And as far as the writing goes, I like David Michelini, however you say his last name. But it's some corny dialogue.
Well, yeah, it's 90s dialogue. It's real cheesy. The bad guys are very two-dimensional. I think they all have cut-off T-shirts, or they're wearing slick suits and ties and slick back hair with shoe grease or whatever. But,
well, here's the one thing that got me, and one of the lines that stuck out was Nova telling Spider-Man to lose 30 pounds because he's a porco.
Yeah.
Spidey loses 30 pounds. He's emaciated.
Yeah. Wow. Well, for me, the reason why I chose this issue is this was, Jason, I was telling you this before the show started, but this was the first comic book that I ever paid for with my own money. I can remember to this day, I was living in a small town called Baldwin, Michigan. It's like a town of less than 1,000 people. They had this one ice cream parlor. It was called Jones Ice Cream. And he had this comic book rack. It was one of the little spinny racks that would destroy the comics as soon as you put them in there.
Right.
I can remember walking in there with $2, and I grabbed this, Amazing number 351, and some random Fantastic Four issue that I don't even think I have anymore. But as soon as I read this, I mean, from the cover alone, just looking at Spider-Man, his hand outstretched, reaching right towards you, jumping off of the page, I mean, it just looks fantastic. This captivated me. This pulled me in and made me a Spider-Man fan. I mean, as a kid, you know, I grew up watching Spider-Man and his amazing friends and stuff like that. But this right here, this issue, made me a believer.
So before this, Tim, we can establish you were just stealing comics.
No, I was begging my parents to buy them for me.
And when you purchased, did you grumble about the $1.25 price point?
No, actually, it was a dollar. It was a dollar.
Dollar, oh, okay.
It was a dollar. It was still when a dollar would go very far.
Oh, back in the 40s. All right, cool. I was reading Amazing Spider-Man not too much longer before this. I think the first issue I bought was Spider-Man. I forget the number now. But it was definitely Eric Larson was the artist, and Spider-Man and Venom were fighting on a desert island.
Desert island. Yeah, that was a couple issues before this.
Yeah, not too long before that.
Now, for all the Bagley fans, I can hear them screaming in the background. This wasn't the first issue that Bagley did for Spider-Man, though it was the start of him becoming the regular artist at the time.
What was the first?
The first one, believe it or not, is Amazing Spider-Man 345.
Who's in that?
It's Boomerang and Cardiac.
Yes, Cardiac. I remember that.
Oh, Lord, Cardiac.
And cool. There wasn't anything wrong with him.
That's another podcast.
He had a laser stick.
Yeah, right? But he was awesome. He was a scientist that had his own morals and standards, and he just liked beating people up.
We have very different definitions of the word awesome.
Well, okay, so that's 351. Let's go into Rebirth number 3. Tom, why did you choose that?
All right, now let's see. I own the hardcover of Rebirth, and I was counting through it to make sure I had the right one. I hope I have the right one. But I chose Rebirth number 3 because it does something that I actually love about comics that I think started really gaining prominence in comics, and this is the perfect example of it, and that is the retcon.
Okay. All right. I think I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, I love the idea of going back into a story and kind of looking at it from a different angle and showing us what was happening off camera, so to speak.
Right.
And the hoops that Geoff Johns jumped through to bring Hal Jordan back to life to justify in a sense, his doings as Parallax
mm-hmm.
to explain away the ridiculous "these rings don't work on yellow" rule. All those things, those are some really, really high leaps to hurdle as a writer. And I think he does such a fantastic job in this. I mean, to me, that's the ideal example of what a retcon should do, because I think the story works completely, and it creates, you know, he brings back Sinestro, makes him twice as dangerous as he was before.
They
turn Parallax into an A-level villain. Just glowing yellow alien. I think it's just fantastic work, and of course the artwork is gorgeous.
They even talk about Alan Scott in here and his severe allergy to wood, like as a Green Lantern, like wood was the only thing that could hurt him or something like that.
Yeah, remember that? Yeah.
But I see what you say about, you know, doing the retcon and stuff like that. I went to my local comic shop and bought the trade just so I could have the entire story and not just issue 3.
Okay.
And I'm flipping through here, and you can see where it kind of breaks off, like midway through the comic book, and it starts talking about exactly what you said, the retcon, and explaining certain things, going into why he has the white streaks of hair. Jason, jump in on this.
Yeah, it's the perfect retcon. Every aspect that Johns writes into makes sense. It pulls from, you know, the earlier history of why everything happened the way it did.
Yeah.
It's just, it's really surprising that this is really Johns' first run-in with Green Lantern. Like, this was the first thing he ever really did for Green Lantern, and it worked perfectly.
That's so surprising to me, because when I started reading this, I even said this to you, Jason, in text, this was very well written. I still can't believe that this was the first thing he did with Green Lantern. I mean, it's just too good to be a start.
It's not the first thing. I would call it the best thing he's done with Green Lantern, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, it's great. If you've never been a fan of Green Lantern, I definitely recommend grabbing Rebirth. Go grab the trade. I mean, you can get the trade for
15
amount. Yeah, but it's worth it. It's worth picking up to read. I mean, this will pull you in.
It's definitely a tops issue. There is no fault in this issue.
Yeah. Look, it's yeah, I bought the hardcover way back when. This is one of my favorite trades, my favorite hardcovers. I think it's a fantastic story. And, you know, if you never read a Green Lantern story before, and I was not a huge Green Lantern fan at all, because primarily speaking, I'm mostly Marvel, but this got me reading Green Lantern at the time. It's a fantastic portrayal. It's also, I mean, throughout the whole story, does a great job of giving you the, and you kind of went away from it in the stories after, which was disappointing, gives you a great job of showing you the differences between each Green Lantern and how they each wield the ring differently. It's brilliantly done. It's definitely one of my favorite hardcovers up here on my shelf.
And you already alluded to that. Van Siever's art is gorgeous.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, there's no words to, you know, properly describe how good it is.
And the whole thing is just cinematic, which is why essentially became kind of the starting point for the movie. But that's another podcast, and probably an article for me coming up.
Okay. Yeah. So two things that this did for me. One is it wiped out that horrendous story with Guy Gardner and the Warrior stuff. It took that all away and made Guy Gardner badass again. Made him a badass Green Lantern. Number two is the sucker punch with Hal Jordan on Batman.
Yeah.
You can't get any better than that. What does he say? I'm going to find that page right now. I think he looks right at Batman. Where are you? It's right here. He looks right at Batman, and he just looks at him and nails him right in the face and says, "Right now, we are. Let's go, Lanterns." Guy Gardner turns around. Did you see that? One punch. You know, Hal, I've always liked you. I love it. Love it.
And there are little touches in here. I love in this trade how Batman, until there's a point, I think, where Jon Stewart shines his light on him, where Batman only appears as a silhouette for, like, an entire issue of the book.
Wow.
if you know, until there's a moment where Jon Stewart kind of lights him up and gives a whole, illuminates him completely, but he only appears as the Batman silhouette, the pointy ears, the black shadow, and the eyes.
Right. But it even goes into it, you know, like Batman resides through fear. If you fear him, then he works. If you don't, then Jon Stewart said it best. Batman is just another man.
Yeah, yeah. And look, I mean, going back to my main point for picking it, I love a good retcon, and this trade is like the anti-Sentry. And I'll say this about the Sentry. I love the concept of the Sentry, and just the execution was so botched. And I mean, I'm a huge Bendis fan. That was his biggest failing, was the Sentry.
That was his biggest failing? Okay, that's a different podcast.
With that, we'll leave it there. Jason, we need you to bring Kelly back. We're going to run some bumper music real quick. But before we do, I just want to take a minute to say that to anybody listening right now, if you haven't had a chance, go to stashmycomics.com. Go ahead and just take the time to register. It's real quick. It's real easy. There's tons of stuff that you can do there. I mean, there's the comic cataloging. There's the blog, which has Tom's article, Geek Cinema. It has the advanced reviews. We've got some advanced reviews coming up of a bunch of new Image titles, reviews of the new Valiant stuff that's coming up, Exo number 2, Harbinger number 1. The list goes on and on. The current back issue, Been to the Future review that I did on Daredevil number 1 is up right now. Lots of stuff you guys need to check out. Lots of stuff that you can honestly enjoy throughout your day. Also, hit us up on Facebook, facebook.com/stashmycomics. Hit that like button, guys. Twitter, the same thing, twitter.com/stashmycomics. We put stuff up there every day. And also, you need to hit the merchandise store, zazzle.com/stashmycomics. ZAZZLE.com/stashmycomics. Get a t-shirt, get a bumper sticker, show the support. You guys know what to do. Cue the music. Okay, so we're at our big segment. This is called the Weekly Distraction, and this is what you guys are going to be talking about for the rest of the week, and I guarantee it. What we're going to be doing is we're going to talk about Before Watchmen. Ooh, burn, big, huge, scary topic. It is, if you look at it. I mean, Alan Moore's already up in arms about it. He's already going crazy. But I have...
What doesn't Alan Moore get up in arms about?
Anything that pisses off Alan Moore is good for me.
Well, I've got something here that'll piss him off. This is something I got at the local comic store. It is a newspaper size advertisement, basically. It's a newspaper for all intents and purposes. It says New Frontiersman on the top, and in big, bold print, it says Judgment Day. And then it's got a couple of articles here. Wake Up America, Who Watches the Watchmen? Punks Destroy England, Are We Next? I mean, it just goes on and on. This is, I think, one of the best ways to advertise for Watchmen, if you look at it. If anybody gets a chance, go to your local comic store and pick this up. Have you seen it, Kelly? Do you know?
Yeah, I saw it.
Yeah.
It's really cool.
I saw this and I hate to grab it.
When did it come out?
Watchmen, the new Watchmen stuff.
August, I think.
This month.
No, I think this month. The first one comes out.
Okay.
It starts this month. Now,
is this one Minutemen, right? Number one?
Yeah, I believe so. Now, I have chosen, I think, one is obvious. I've got Rorschach on my pull list, and I've got Night Owl on my pull list. Kelly, did you choose anything specific, or are you just going to grab them all?
I haven't chosen any yet, but I'll probably get Rorschach and Comedian.
Really? Okay. All right.
Yeah.
What about you? What are you going after?
Dead air.
You may have lost him. Jason, what are you going after for Before Watchmen?
Well, definitely Rorschach. I don't. Like, if you like Watchmen and you're not getting the Rorschach, I don't know how you're a fan of Watchmen. But yeah, definitely Rorschach, probably Night Owl. I don't know. I might just try them all, see if they're all good.
Okay, okay. Tom, anything specific you're going to go for?
Meh. I'm pretty ambivalent on Watchmen overall. Of them, I would probably say, yeah, we're going to get into that, don't worry.
You're putting the gloves on early.
Yeah, the one that jumps up to me is probably Minutemen. That's the one I'm probably most interested in.
Okay, okay. That takes it back to the golden age of comics and teens,
yeah.
If you look at it. I mean, Minutemen is basically like a carbon copy of Justice Society.
Right.
But all right, let's talk about it. Jason and Tom, go ahead and get in the ring. Put your gloves on, because I know we've got two different viewpoints here.
you lead off, Jason. Go ahead.
Well, I guess...
Obviously, I like the graphic novel more. It's to me, it fleshes out the story better than the movie. Look, I love the movie. Me saying I like the graphic novel more doesn't mean I think that the movie's crap, because it's not. It's great. But to me, the graphic novel fleshes the characters and the story out better. It has the better ending, in my opinion, even though I understand they had to do different endings for time constraints. But yeah, it works better as a whole story for me.
Did you say the graphic novel has a better ending?
Yes.
No.
Why not?
Okay, look, I know everyone loves giant squids. We all love giant squids. All right?
No, it wasn't the giant squid angle. It was just the workup to that.
I thought the workup to that was pretty much, look, unless you memorize the graphic novel word for word, which I haven't, I'll admit, and full disclosure, I don't dislike the graphic novel. It's my favorite thing Alan Moore's done. I read the graphic novel the first time once. And I was like, I don't get it. Read it the second time. I was like, oh, this is genius. Okay, no problem. But I think the movie was as good an adaptation of that graphic novel that you could possibly ask for. I think it tells the story and gets the points of the graphic novel across without meandering as much as the graphic novel does, because that bothers me in the graphic novel. I love the ending where instead of this giant squid appearing out of nowhere, it's Dr. Manhattan appearing out of nowhere, because that really is what's going to turn people against these mystery men, these superheroes, which is Ozymandias, one of his ultimate goals here. I think the movie is as well executed as if I had to choose for a sit-down piece of entertainment, am I going to go read Watchmen again? No, but I would watch the movie.
Okay, so with that, Kelly, do you honestly think that Before Watchmen really needs to be done? I mean, with a piece of comic book history that showed that comics were not just for kids at that time, that they could be written for adults. Does something like Before Watchmen really need to take place?
I don't think, Before Watchmen necessarily, has to be written, but, I mean, it's nice for fans to have, supplementary information and, background stories and stuff.
Okay, okay.
What comic book has to be written? Nothing has to be written.
Well, right, that's true. That's very true, Tom. But, I mean, a big argument that a lot of people have is that Watchmen is its own thing, and that everything that's in Watchmen is good enough. You know?
Well, I mean, honestly, if you don't like it, you could consider it just, out of canon.
Okay.
Or you could just not buy it and not read it. I mean, look, DC's running the business. If Alan Moore's got a problem, he shouldn't have signed the contract that said they can retain the rights.
That's very true. That's very true. And he's
I know there's a lot about comic creators' rights, and that's a huge issue amongst the comics creators community. I get that.
He knew what was going to happen when this was created. I mean, it was created by the number two publishing company for comic books in the country, in the world. Okay,
yeah.
And when he wrote the 12 issues for Watchmen, he had to have known that they were going to use this to sell not only in issue form, but in graphic novel form, released and re-released and then re-released again.
And he's got a clause in his contract for Watchmen that says a year after it goes out of print, he gets the rights back. Well, it's never gone out of print.
Exactly, exactly. That may be kind of a bogus move on DC's part, but, that's neither here nor there. Me personally, I'm kind of on the fence about this. It's not going to hurt my day if I don't read about Watchmen. Now the graphic novel, I enjoyed. I enjoyed that. I read that while my wife was in the hospital giving birth to our son. So that was a book that kept me company when she was passed out. But I read it the 3 days that we were in the hospital. That's what I read. When she was sleeping, I was reading. And I really enjoyed it. But like a lot of other people, the first thing that I got as far as being exposed to Watchmen was the movie. And I have to agree with Tom that I think that the movie ultimately is a little bit better than what the graphic novel was.
We're going to be excommunicated.
I have the extended super ultimate cut of Watchmen that has the Black Freighter stuff thrown in, the animated stuff that they did.
Yeah, I don't need that.
Well, see, that to me, it just enhanced the movie because it makes it feel more like, it's like 4 hours long, but it makes it feel more like the graphic novel, and I love the graphic novel.
It's so good with the Black Freighter stuff added to it because it does give that feel. I'll agree with you on that.
But I think from a filmmaking standpoint, it's not necessary to have it.
It's not necessary to have it. It just makes it feel more like the graphic novel for me.
I mean, as a comic book fan, yes, it's nice for it to be like panel for panel the comic. But as also someone who watches films, I want it to be a good film that doesn't drag on and have unnecessary things to it.
Right on. You want it to be something that you can sit down and enjoy for 2 to 3 hours.
Yeah.
Not four.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't mind watching 4-hour movies. I'll do it, but I mean, if it's not necessary, then it doesn't have to be there.
Okay, so let's go into portrayal of characters then. With before Watchmen, we're obviously going to see them at the beginning, at their roots, at their start. But with the graphic novel versus the movie, how is the portrayal of those guys? I mean, I personally think that they nailed Rorschach, and with the actor that they got for him, it was a perfect fit. It was fantastic.
I thought all the casting was perfect, to be honest.
Yeah, absolutely. Ozymandias, you really, at least for me, as the movie was going on, I wasn't quite sure about him, but at the end, I think like everybody else, I hated the hell out of him. He was just so smug and so for sure about everything that he was doing that this is what had to be done. There was no way around it.
Yeah, Rorschach is just the best character on screen because, one, all of his lines are lifted from the book.
Yep.
But not only that, Jackie Earle Haley does a fantastic job of delivering them. Exactly how you read the novel, and that's how you heard Rorschach speak in your head.
Right. Now I think that Zack Snyder visually did it justice, like Tom said. I mean, there may have been another director that could have done it, but not the way that Snyder did. Snyder did it just right. I mean, with the over-exaggerated scenes for action and stuff like that, and with the special effects.
Yeah, his Snyderisms, you know. And what he did was great, and I've read this in some reviews, and I'm just sort of parroting that now, that the graphic novel is a deconstruction of the superhero comic, and the movie is a deconstruction of the superhero movie, very distinctly, you know, right down to using that Smashing Pumpkins song from Batman and Robin, but using the B-side of it in the trailer.
Right, absolutely. That just seeing that with Night Owl's ship coming out of the water, tell me that did not send shivers down everybody's spine when you saw that.
Is it Archimedes or Archimedes? Is that a hard C or a soft C? I can't remember.
Archimedes.
Archimedes.
Yeah.
Look, I was wrong on two counts. Okay.
here's one thing about the movie that I love. Like in theater, I was blown away. The opening sequence, the 10 minutes or so with times they are a changing.
Oh yes,
and it basically recounts all through the Minutemen history.
Yeah,
that's a great scene.
Yeah, that's a brilliant credit sequence.
In a really good way too. I mean, it goes into it shows the start where they're taking the picture, and then it moves forward to how the one goes crazy, the other is killed, and on and on and so forth and so forth. But I agree, it looked fantastic. Let's see here. Now, with Dr. Manhattan and Silk Spectre 2, with the portrayal of him in the comic books, to me it felt like he was very flat, like he had lost all emotion at that point, from where he was to where he was at that point in the comic books. And now in the movie, obviously a little more emotion and stuff like that was put into it, but as far as comparisons go, what did you guys think?
With Dr. Manhattan?
Yeah, like the difference between him in the movie versus him in the graphic novel.
Because honestly, he was pretty much exactly what he sounded and pretty much exactly as I thought he would, to be perfectly honest with you. I thought Billy Crudup did a fantastic job. Physically, I think it was his head on Model's body, right?
I think so.
Yeah, but either way, this just goes down to the casting and the execution, where there wasn't one piece of casting in this film that was out of place, you know, no matter how much Alan Moore didn't like it.
Well, with Alan Moore, I mean, there was the tragedy that was League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, but yeah, he shouldn't have been upset about this one.
That movie. I thought League of Extraordinary Gentlemen was a good movie.
So that's what's wrong with you.
But I'm looking here. Now the people that are going to be writing before Watchmen, you have Brian Azzarello. He's currently doing Wonder Woman right now. He also did 100 Bullets. If anybody's never read 100 Bullets, I strongly recommend to go check it out. It's really good.
He did some Superman stuff, too.
Yeah, but you got J. Michael Straczynski. He's doing Dr. Manhattan. Jay Lee is doing the artwork for Ozymandias. That in itself is going to be a masterpiece. With Night Owl, you have Andy Kubert and Joe Kubert coming together to do the artwork, and Straczynski is doing the writing on Night Owl, too. With comedian Brian Azzarello's writing that I think is where he's going to shine. Not so much with Rorschach, but with what he's going to write with comedian, because I think that might be more up his alley. But then looking at Silk Spectre, Darwin Cook is going to be doing the writing on that, and he's also going to be doing the work on Minutemen.
I'm surprised Geoff Johns isn't going to be doing something.
I know, but I think that the lineup they got is pretty good.
Yeah, it's definitely a great set of writers. Yeah.
Geoff Johns is too busy architecting the new 52, I think.
Very true. It's very true. Yeah.
Probably.
It's all A-list creators. It's all guys who you would read books essentially just because they wrote them.
Right. The
whole... These are all guys at the top of the game. I mean, there's nothing to criticize as far as the creative. Look, DC, is DC making a buck grab? Yeah, because everyone's going to buy these. Absolutely. But are they treating the property with respect? Absolutely. They're putting A-list teams on these books. It's not like, look, no matter critically what people say or how they're received, no one can say they're not trying to do it right.
See, and that's really the big thing, is that I think a lot of fans have concerns about is that the graphic novel itself is such a treasured piece of comic history that they're afraid of what else other people could do. And I agree with you, Tom, that they've got A-list people working on an A-list story. And I think that with the people that they have writing the respective titles that they've got on set on, and even the ones doing the artwork, that fits 100%. I mean, Jay Lee on Ozymandias, what was Ozymandias? I mean, he felt that he was a god among men.
Uh-huh.
And the artwork, the last thing I saw Jay Lee do was the stuff on Gunslinger. Over at Marvel, but taking that and putting his talents on Ozymandias, it's going to be fantastic.
Did Jay Lee do that World War II Transformers book years ago?
He did, and I actually have that upstairs in my comic book room.
That's gorgeous stuff, man.
But with Hubert, with Andy and Joe doing Night Owl, that is perfect there, too. That's going to look fantastic.
Is it Night Owl 1 or Night Owl 2?
Night Owl 2.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because Night Owl 1's going to be in Minutemen.
Right, of course, yeah, okay.
Kelly, you've been awful quiet through all of this. Give us your thoughts. What are you thinking?
I've just been listening, sorry.
Yeah, you listen.
But I mean, like with the stuff like with Jay Lee and with Adam Hughes doing the artwork for Dr. Manhattan, you know, or even over with what you're going to get on Comedian with Azzarello doing the artwork or doing the writing for that. What do you think about that?
I'm fine with anyone doing it as long as they stay true to the characters, because the characters are really most important to me.
Right.
Yeah. Of course, bottom line. It seemed to be right. They chose the right talent for the right books. Not only have, you know, Frank Cho doing the Comedian, you know, so we're okay.
Well, on that note, ladies and gentlemen, we have come to the end. Tom, Kelly, Jason, thank you very much for taking the time out of your guys' busy day to join me for this podcast. It has been a pleasure.
Wait, no final thoughts?
Oh, right on. Final thoughts. Yes. Jason, go.
About everything or just Watchmen?
Everything that we've talked about today. Alan Scott, North Star, the reviews, before Watchmen, after Watchmen.
I don't know. I think we pretty much covered it all. I'm going to try and convince Tom that the graphic novel's better. I don't know if that's going to work, but I'm going to try.
I want to put it. I think the graphic novel is genius. It's my favorite thing that Alan Moore has written. I prefer the movie as sit down entertainment. I'm probably not going to read the graphic novel again anytime soon, but I think it's fantastic. I think The Killing Joke is a piece of garbage, but that's another thing altogether.
Haven't read that yet. Don't ruin it for me.
Yeah. Oh, I won't then. Okay. I would want to personally beat up Alan Moore for Lost Girls. But aside from that, Watchmen is a great graphic novel. I'm not going to sit here and deny that, not at all.
Oh, one other thing. Tim, when you were talking about the people that were getting up in arms about, you know, them actually doing before Watchmen stuff because it would ruin or sully the name of the graphic novel or, you know, the original story.
Yes.
That sounds like Star Wars fans about the prequels.
Oh, that is that's definitely for another podcast. Or you can talk about it on the Geek Cinema article, which specifically talks about Star Wars prequels and how awesome Jar Jar Binks is. Am I right, Tom?
Jar Jar Binks is fantastic. That's not quite what I said, but yeah, I have a defense for Jar Jar Binks. It's in the comments section, particular. Yeah.
Kelly, final thoughts. What do you got to say?
I'm definitely going to read some of the Before Watchmen. I don't know if I'll enjoy it. I don't know if I'm going to think it's, like, the worst thing ever or the best thing ever, but I'll definitely check it out.
Okay. What about the Alan Scott stuff in North Star?
I'm excited. I think it's a good thing, so.
Okay.
And hopefully people will enjoy it.
Right on. Tom, you've got a couple of sites that you want to plug real quick?
I'm going to redirect people just real quick. As you may or may not know from following my Geek Cinema column, I'm also a playwright, a novelist. Right now, if you want to check out some of my writing, you can go to raceandcookie.blogspot.com, which features some of the writing of my sort of flagship main characters, Race McCloud, Private Eye, and his 15-year-old niece, Cookie McCloud, former secret agent in training. They're characters I've worked with for like 15 years on various mediums, and you can read some short stories there. And that's where you can kind of keep posted of stuff that I'm working on. I'll probably plug that in my column as well.
Right on. And with that, we are down to the last 30 seconds. So I just want to say again, thank you very much, Jason, Kelly, Tom. Go to stashmycomics.com. Make sure you guys register if you haven't registered already. Take part in the blogs. Don't be afraid to hit that comment button and give us your thoughts. Let us know what you think. Also, hit up the forum section, go to the Facebook page, go to Twitter. Let's not forget to buy that T-shirt or that bumper sticker at Zazzle.com/StashMyComics. Keep an eye out for new stuff coming from Back Issue Bin to the Future, some new advance reviews, some regular reviews. We are out of here.